Talk given Saturday, 4th January 1975. Christmas, which is regarded as a holiday, is a time when a very large portion of the world, at least a quarter of it, expends its energies in jollifications, in having a merry time. And it is characterized by the pursuit of pleasure. There is also much else attached to it, the family meetings, all the friendly exchanges, and so forth. But pleasure, its pursuit, and the enormous expense and the squandering of energy over it rather characterizes what most of the world does. There are some, a minority, who understand something at least of the profound significance of this holiday, which means a holy day. And those few also experience pleasure. We have to distinguish between pleasure as the mass of people understand it, pursue it, and enjoy it, and the right pleasure which comes to those who have an intelligent and a truly human approach. There is a very great difference between these two pleasures. Pleasure as such is a necessity for man. Pleasure is necessary for health and well-being. Science, in recent times, has discovered something of the nature of the physiological processes in the body involved in pleasure. And it has shown, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that a certain degree of pleasure must be present in order that a human being may be healthy. But science still has to make further discoveries and find out what is right pleasure. We all know only too well that the indiscriminate pursuit of pleasure brings much ill into our lives, not only physically, but, and especially but, also psychologically. Because in the pursuit, the fevered pursuit of pleasure, we cease to be human in the true sense of the word. To be human means to be the happy creator. That is its real meaning, derived from the word itself, human. But the senseless pursuit of pleasure prevents one from being the happy creator. It completely shuts out the creative aspect of our life and the creative awareness of our existence in this world. Therefore, we must be very careful to distinguish between pleasure as the world understands it and right pleasure, which is the birthright of the human being and comes to us if we renounce pursuit and relinquish the ordinary tools of pleasure. In the pursuit of pleasure, our whole activity, physically and psychologically, is self-centered, self-oriented. We are enslaved by sensational delight. We crave for greater and greater intensity of sensational delight, which is destructive both of the organism, the psychophysical organism, and certainly blinds us to the nature of our own existence, of ourselves, the truth, and certainly prevents religious living in the real sense. So, this renunciation and relinquishment means that one has taken the right step towards releasing oneself from bondage to the drive, the pleasure lust, the drive of pleasure lust in us, which keeps us at a subhuman level. What happens then? Pleasure, right pleasure, inevitably comes to us. We cannot avoid it. The cosmos is so constituted, and we are so constituted, that through the avenues of all our senses, a flood tide of true happiness comes into our being through the use of our sense of sight, our sense of hearing, our sense of touch, our memory, our capacity to think, to observe, to understand, to feel all the deeper and the finer feelings, and remain poised and quiet. And in that poise and quiet, we can absorb happiness in the right way, in the way which does not destroy body and soul. And in that absorption, there is the delight of experience of this world, the delight of our own existence in this world. Then one is truly happy. One knows what true pleasure is. Because every sensation which is not sought by us, which we do not crave for, but which inevitably and naturally comes to us day in and day out, simply because we actually live in this globe, on this globe. Every such sensation, rightly received, rightly absorbed, becomes a health-giving thing, not something destructive. Now, this is an extremely important matter. We who meet here are concerned with living the religious life, and we know only too well, reading the scriptures of the world, that as far as the conventional orthodox writings go, pleasure has been decried, especially all sense pleasure. Attention has been drawn to its destructive side only. But hardly anything, or at least only very little, has been mentioned about its constructive, creative side, which we have tried to see very briefly these few moments. It is difficult to be poised, especially in our modern world. Everything around us is so plagued with violence, with evil, in one form or another, that the psychical atmosphere is charged with forces which prevent any person who is striving to live the better life from living the better life. Because our own psyche reacts against this terrible atmosphere which is created by all the ill that seems to be becoming a conflagration, literally, all over the world. But we have to try. We have to try and remain awake to the fact that this is what is, this is how it is happening, this is how we are reacting. If one does remain poised in the midst of all this evil, then one finds that one becomes even more sensitive to everything. You will say, but in that case the evil will have a more terrible effect upon me. No, it won't. If I remain poised and quiet in the midst of the ill, I become more sensitive, but more capable of absorbing that evil without being broken by it, without being hurt by it. Instead of being hurt and therefore reacting back, instead of floundering about trying to escape it and so forth, compassion wells up inside. And in that state of compassion, the psyche is quite invincible. It is not merely invincible, it becomes free of conflict. It takes two to make a quarrel. One cannot fight with itself. And it is very important to understand this and experience this fact, that to remain poised, quiet, intensely sensitive and absorptive makes us compassionate and therefore a healing power in our environment, and makes us free, keeps us free of being hurt and broken by the ill around us. You mustn't merely believe what I say. On the other hand, don't reject it out of hand. Consider it and experiment with it. Experience. Find out for yourself. Is this so? Is it not so? But in the efforts to find out, beware of this subtle belief in what I say, because it is rather pleasant to believe what I have just said, and subconsciously you start off with a bias in favor of it. No, that won't help you. Experiment, experience with a completely open mind, which is the serious mind, and see, does this work? Next time we hear some terrible news from somewhere, some murder, some evil, some raising the cost of postage stamps to £1 a letter, you see, see whether anger flares up inside, or annoyance or upset or whatever it is. Be very much awake and stay poised and calm. Not only will there be sensitivity and an absorption of it all, not only will there be compassion, but insight into many related things will open up simultaneously. No one thing exists on its own, unrelated to other things. Any one thing is wholly and totally related to every other thing in some way or other. The whole of the universe is an interconnected web of action. The whole universe interflows within itself. Every single thing influences all the rest. So that we live in a universe where not only is there this interflowing of all the energies, they are interpenetrating, but there is this universal interfluence going on all the time. Each one thing influences every other thing. Now, in which way do we influence the world around us for its good? Not by planning out, not by thinking it out, because all our thought, all our planning, until we are the perfected holy ones, is always self-centered. It is the planning and thinking of conditioned beings. In some respect or other, we are ill within ourselves. And that illness stamps itself on all our thinking and planning. We can never get free of that. So what is it within us that influences? You know these words, destiny and fate. All sorts of definitions have been given to these words. It might be helpful for us to approach this matter and consider it in this way. I have talked of this interflowing of the universe and this interfluence that takes place all the time. These interpenetrating energies weave a web which is the withinness in myself, a web of consciousness, a web which represents my mode of awareness of existence, my mode of awareness of existence. Is it an intelligent mode? Is it a pure mode? Is it a creative mode? Or is it sluggish? Is it foolish? Ignorant? Now, note carefully, this thing we call consciousness or awareness is quite indefinable, really. What on earth is consciousness? I can't tell you. I can't isolate it. When I'm awake and paying attention to what I'm seeing or hearing, I am conscious of that which I see or hear. The verb, I am, to be conscious, has a real meaning. But consciousness, I can't pinpoint it like we can pinpoint a liver or a kidney or a nose or a hand or something. We can pinpoint certain moods, feelings, particular ideas, certainly particular ideas and thoughts and all the rest of it. That we know as this, that and the other, psychically, intellectually. Oh, what is this thing, consciousness? This mode of awareness of existence. I don't know. Do you? I like to call this the light of the soul. Feel it out, this web of consciousness which the mysterious interpenetrating energies of the world, of the universe, unknown to us, weaves and endows this particular psychophysical organism with that, is the light of the soul. In the darkness is that one light. There is another web in relation to me then, who am the keeper, the tender. I have to tend this light of the soul within me. Now there is another web which is external to this psychophysical organism, to this man who is the keeper and the one who tends this light to the soul. And that web, the external, is fate. That which is within me is destiny. I define this arbitrarily in this manner. I make no apology for it. I find it helpful, it works. Destiny is that web of consciousness within me, because that mysterious unknown, which is the fundamental inside me, holds within itself the potentiality to bring to fruition everything with which this psychophysical organism may be endowed, provided I let it and don't interfere with it. That is, to use another phrase, the divine inside me, the eternal inside me, Brahman is in me, the unborn, the unbecome within me. That is destiny. And this other thing is fate, which presents the circumstance. Fate all the time presents the challenge through circumstance around me. I can't control the climate of this country, for instance. I have no control or power over the natural resources of the country, etc., etc. All that is external to me. It is fate. This is the situation. Now, these are not fixed forces. They are continuously changing forces. So fate throws the challenge every time. Now, how do I meet the challenge? In the ordinary way, all of us meet it foolishly. When a challenge comes to us, we either run away from it if we are frightened, or we fight against it. Both ways are the ways of the stupid. Because remember, fate, this web which is the external to me, includes all other beings who have their own individual destiny. Any one of you who has his own individual destiny has me and everybody else as part of your fate. Where shall we run away? Think this out carefully, because there are enormous implications involved in it all. The whole web of our life from moment to moment is contained in this sort of picture of destiny and fate. Now, this is where intelligence and religiousness in the supreme sense comes into play. Fate throws the challenge. I do not fight against it. I do not run away from it. Be as awake as possible and see it for what it is. Do not choose this or that element in it and abstract it, because that is all self-orientation, which is quite useless. 4,000 million people in the world behaving self-orientedly, and we have our wonderful world as it is, a precious world we have made of it. So you see, don't pick and choose. Don't take sides with anything. completely understand it, remain poised, awake, grow more and more sensitive, absorb it all, and this inner web, the light of the soul, a destiny, exerts an influence, a mysterious influence, which brings about the best possible result in answer, in cooperation with the power of fate. In any case, always remember that fate was before us and will survive us. My individual destiny, your individual destiny, emerges in the cosmic destiny, which is fate, the power of fate. Do you see it? So that I come and go, 70, 80, 90 years, or maybe days, or even minutes, depending on how long I live. The same with any one of you. The same with any single manifested thing in the universe through the entire process of time. But this thing, which is the destiny of the cosmos, is in the womb of eternity itself. Now this destiny, which is fate, is the power which always, to use the ambivalent, dualistic phrase, which is not a very good phrase, wins out. Fate always wins out. But if I am intelligent and perceptive, there is no battle, there is no victory for anyone. What is there then? Destiny and fate know the marriage made in heaven. They work together. And in that working, you, the individual, are the happy creator. Because it is an activity of transcendent love, then. The love that takes in everything that the universe pours into you and throws against you, as we might say. You see, again, there are tremendous implications in all this, touching our daily conduct in life. Every little thing is charged with universal significance and power. We have to awaken to this. And it is not difficult, you know. Don't strain the mind to see it. You will just see it with the wonderful, sweet ease with which a child sees a rose and says, ah, that's a rose. And if you ask, what is a rose? The child looks at you as much as to say, you are silly, aren't you? A rose is a rose. See it that way. In that manner, I mean. Then there is no strain. Now, the one who can let his destiny work out from within is the man who, to use older terminology, is the man in whom the immanent God has been allowed to enter his own kingdom, which is the body itself. Your psychophysical organism is your kingdom. And the Lord of the universe is this light of the soul within you. It is this which is born on Christmas Day. And Christmas Day, in its profoundest significance, is every single moment of your existence. Because you and I are conscious of living in time and through time. This is our ignorant state of consciousness. You and I live, exist in eternity all the time. We are the limitations of unidirectional time in terms of past, present and future don't exist. There is only the totality forever and ever. That's a bad phrase, forever and ever, because that implies time, unfortunately. It's very difficult to talk about eternity. But you can get the feel of it. And once something clicks, and it clicks if you're not striving, not struggling. When something clicks, then suddenly you are in eternity. You have known it. And then fate and destiny work all your life as co-partners. Now there's another thing to bear in mind. Transcendence functions very strangely. Mysterious are the ways of providence. Even more mysterious are the ways of transcendence. Transcendence manifests its own transcendence by allowing your potentialities, your destiny, to come to fruition. Transcendence also demonstrates its transcendence by withholding the expression of all your potentialities. How often we have been astonished, sad. How often we have wondered why this man with such remarkable gifts and so forth, for doing good, for producing beauty and loveliness around him, is thwarted everywhere, every time, all along the line. And we feel like cursing fate. No. This is a demonstration of transcendence at work. For the realization of transcendence, which is the supreme destiny of the light of the soul within me, of my destiny, you see? For the realization of transcendence, I must be totally free of all duality to fulfill or not to fulfill. That is not for me to say. Because if I were to say anything here, I am sundering the totality, the unity of transcendence. Then it is the case of my will, O Lord, not thine. No, if it is to be thus, all right, let it be thus. It is beautiful. It is wonderful. It's a terrible beauty, if you like. It's an awe-inspiring beauty. but think. You are the instrument for the catharsis of 100, 1,000 other souls around you who see this phenomenon and see you moving serenely through the denial of expression, the denial of fulfillment to you. What happens to you yourself, to me myself, if denial is to be the situation, if fate is to win, as the ignorant man would say? I have to be always in tune with transcendence. And it's difficult. It's very difficult. Because the organism will stand displeasure. Now we come back to this original point of pleasure. Will stand pain up to a certain limit only. After that, the organism disrupts. It dies. It must of necessity die. It will die in any case. But how shall I die? This is the point. Shall I die miserably like anybody else does, clinging to life, struggling for breath, wanting to exist when really it were far better that existence ceased? Shall I die with my eyes unopened to truth? Or shall I let the light of the soul flame completely through me so that every atom of my being is that light? Because I have seen the vision of the transcendent reality and know for a certainty, and don't merely accept with a sour resignation the dictates of an autocratic God. If I really see this, there is no displeasurable experience within me. In the midst of pain, in the midst of unfulfillment, I have not overcome sorrow. I have not fought against evil. No. I have absorbed it, and in that absorption, the transformation has taken place. Divinity has manifested its other face. You know, we are going through terrible times, and they'll become worse and worse still. And how do we approach the situation from moment to moment? Don't we approach it in terms of conflict? Because we desire security, because we desire pleasure, comfort. Don't we fall on the side of stagnation rather than going forward? And if we choose to go forward, then we have to beware of that other devil inside us, that I have chosen to achieve against something. But what is it that which I am up against? Only transcendence. God is the absolute totality. the task. Let us not minimize the difficulties of the task. They are tremendous. But when vision comes, when this light of the soul suddenly fills the whole mind, the whole being, everything gets transformed. Not that the external circumstance will change. Your chair will remain a chair. Your old leaky kettle will still be a leaky kettle. You'll have to get a new one. And so forth. Not that. But the transformation is within you. And that is all that matters. That is what you and I are here for. For this transformation, this transmutation. And then the whole being, the body itself, is transfigured. Is it not significant? The transfiguration of the Holy One, of the perfected human, has been presented in all the great religions of the world. What is this mysterious transfiguration? So you see, then we have right pleasure living with such understanding. So that destiny finds true fulfillment, whether the world and worldly standards declare it to be unfulfillment or fulfillment. Makes no difference. Your destiny is fulfilled. There is no conflict between fate and destiny. And then there is true happiness. And it is this true happiness that the great teachers, the holy ones, really cared for. They knew it. They had realized it. They were there. So they knew what they were talking about. Now we can understand why this putrid pursuit of pleasure in the way we do pursue it hinders us all along the line, destroys our true pleasure and our true happiness. The cosmos is full of beautiful and wonderful things which come into you through your eyes, through your ears, through your sense of touch and everything. Be quiet. Let it flow in. And be happy.